All right, let's take our Bibles and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. We'll be finishing up the 8th chapter, getting into the 9th one this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, and I wanted to mention, we've mentioned on Thursday night a couple times, the church is putting together a recording, and we put a lot of work in Thursday and even more on Friday, and it went very well. I've said, I don't know, but very many times that, of course, we worked hard to get ready for it, but God helped our work, and it just went, I never imagined it would go as smoothly as it did, and I think Mr. Brady would definitely agree with that. The orchestra came in at 12:30, and we were done by 4:45. The choir came in at 5:45 and was done by 10:15. I was expecting to be here till 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning. So, of course, we don't have a Christmas CD ready for all of you today, but there's a lot more work to do with what we've got, but we should have a new one ready by the time we have our Christmas concert in December. So, anyway, that went very well. So, for those of you that might have been wondering, and another big thank you to those of you that helped with that and gave your extra time through the last month and especially this week. We've been looking at the book of Ecclesiastes this summer, and one other thing I want to say, and we've said this a couple times, is we've got a new sound system installed, and hopefully from week to week it sounds better, but we know it doesn't sound like it used to, and we're just working on it. Even in the middle of Mr. Brady's lesson, I heard things being changed. So we're trying to adjust that. Hopefully you can understand. It's different. I mean, we have a lot of different speakers in here, and it seems like some of them, you can hear the articulation better from them than others. And so we're working on that. So please bear with us. And I can't say that if you didn't understand it, go get the recording, because you might not be able to understand it on that either. Who knows? But we might be able to. So, anyway, Ecclesiastes. Oh, and one other thing. We were wanting to raise $1,500 to help the Whitakers with the getting ready for Josh Barzahn being there and helping feed and whatever him, and also with the VBS. And we reached $1,500 with last week's offering. So we're right there. We have a few weeks here before the fall campaign, and that will probably just go toward general things. And then after the fall campaign, I don't know the specifics, but we thought we'd try to figure out something to do as Christmas approaches. So now I think we're ready to get into this. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 16 through 9, verse 12. Let's just read these, and then we'll bring the lesson. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 16. When I plied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done upon the earth, for there is that neither day nor night seeth sleep with his eyes, then I beheld all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun, because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, farther, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. For all this, I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth whether either love or hatred by all that is before them. All things come alike to all. There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrifices and to him that sacrificeth not. As is the good, so is the sinner, and he that sweareth, as he that feareth an oath. This is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live, and after that they go to the dead. For to him that is joined to all the living there is hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, and their hatred, and their envy is now perished. Neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. All the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in this life, and in thy labor, which thou takest under the sun. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there's no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. I will point out here just something that's come to mind as we're looking at it. See, in verse 12 it says, man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, as the birds are caught in the snare. Many times the word evil, we think evil as wicked. Let's put it that way. We think evil and wicked mean the same thing. And it seems to me that in the Bible, evil and wicked do not always mean the same thing. In fact, often they don't mean the same thing. Evil is kind of like, I mean, how is a net, a fishing net, evil? Well, it's evil to the fish because he gets caught in it. You understand? So it's evil many times is like bad circumstances, things like that in the Bible. Okay? We can't categorically say every time you see the word evil, it doesn't mean something sinful. In fact, all the evil is in the world because of sin in the first place. Okay, but in this situation, and I say that because even earlier when it uses the word evil in reference to man, it's not necessarily a purposefully sinful thing. It's just the bad consequences as a result of sin in the beginning. So that can maybe help us as we read the scriptures all the time. So in Ecclesiastes, and I've tried to give this review each week through the summer, since there are different people here, and if we have no visitors and you've heard this review six or seven times or just once, here it comes again. Ecclesiastes is a sermon. The very first words of the book says the words of the preacher. And what do preachers do? They preach. And what do they preach? They preach sermons. So Ecclesiastes is a sermon. But it's a different kind of sermon. Not many of today's preachers get up and speak in poetic form. Some preachers will use a short little poem in their sermon. You know, three points, a poem and a prayer or something like that is a humorous thing that we say about preachers sometimes. But there's a tremendous amount of poetry in this, and the stuff that isn't poetry, he uses the same type of figurative, many times the same type of figurative expression. So there's a lot of poetic expression in the preacher's sermon, and then he uses what we call inductive progression, we'll call it. Remember, we've said deduction is where we state our point, what we're trying to get across, and then we support that with supporting information, facts, or illustrations, whatever. Inductive progression starts by just kind of saying different things, and then by the time we get to the end, we draw all those strings together and have a concluding point. So as we've looked through Ecclesiastes, and as we'll continue, he has a text, and then he's going to kind of just jump around, sort of, and say certain things. He gives partial conclusions along the way, but we're getting closer now to this week we're going to start summarizing what he has said, and we're going to get to a conclusion, and it should be a strong conclusion for us. That's kind of the way that the preacher presents his sermon. So, the text is chapter 1, verses 2 through 11. And just to summarize that, we would say that life, and a phrase that we see many times in the book Life Under the Sun, which means the life that we see around us. Okay, the sun is above us. Everything down here on this earth, the way things work, not just the plants and all of that, but everything under here, life under the sun doesn't make sense. And it doesn't fulfill. And it's empty, vain, vanity. It's full of vanity. That phrase is, that's a poetic phrase. And it's full of nothing. How can you be full of nothing? So, but it's vanity of vanities, full of emptiness. So one of the things we can gather just from that phrase is if everything down here is full of emptiness, we want to be filled, we're not going to find it if wherever we look under the sun. If we only look under the sun, we're not going to be fulfilled because everything under the sun is full of just emptiness. So that's kind of something that we can draw along the way, conclude by the things that he's saying. And then in his presentation, he kind of points out different areas of life under the sun that we all experience and some pursue meaning through these channels. And the first is that he talks about is wisdom or knowledge. There are many people who think they're more brainiacs or something like that, and they think this doesn't make sense. I'm just gonna figure it out. I'm going to learn more about it and learn. And if I can just learn more, if I just know more, then I'll understand and I'll know what life is about and I'll have fulfillment in my life. And I always think of that phrase, knowledge is power. You do have power if you know more, but all knowledge isn't all power. All knowledge isn't all fulfilling. Or for mankind, we can never have all knowledge, as we'll see, as he says today. So, seeking and pursuing, say, I'm gonna have fulfillment in my life by learning. That won't answer. Then pleasures, we enjoy things. There's all kinds of things under the sun, within our lives that we can enjoy, but some people think since they're enjoyable, that they just pursue those things all the time. And if they could only just have pleasures all the time, then they'd have a fulfilled life. But the problem with that is you can't. You have to stop. You have to work. You know, you have to eat. You have to do other things. And regardless of how enjoyable the event or activity is that you're in, it comes to an end, and then you want to do it again. So obviously it hasn't fulfilled because you want more of it. So pleasures don't answer. Some people give their life to their business. And I was telling Mr. Goss because he's, I don't know, not because he gives his life to his business, kind of different, but because he's a Christian in the middle of people who I think probably give their life to their business, that I always see him wherever he is. His face sticks out when I get to this point. And he said, but most of the people that he's with, even though they'll work very, very hard, and sometimes worldly business people work harder even than we do sometimes. They work very, very hard, but most of the ones that he knows, they work hard so that they can have pleasures. they don't work for their business, they work for the weekend. But there are some people that work for their business. They just eat, breathe, sleep, business. And that's where they think that they get fulfillment from. But of course, work and business doesn't give us fulfillment either. Public affairs. A public life. Maybe some people like to be in government or something, preachers, you know, up in front of people. Those things of themselves do not fulfill. Some people think money is the answer to everything. Okay? And so the preacher talks about pursuing wealth. And what we say is this, the preacher, in his sermon, he crafts this in such a way, and he has experience, and then he almost creates a situation that no one could ever have as much knowledge as the man he puts before us. No one could ever have as much pleasure as the man he puts before us. No one could ever have accomplished the business accomplishments as the man that he puts before us. No one could have as great a public influence or as much money as the man he puts before us, and yet that man that he presents for us in all of those things that exceeds
what any human being could do, says it was empty. See, that's how he's teaching us that don't even pursue that, because you get all the way to the top, and I've been there, and it's still empty. The answer's not there. So money. We look for money. In the world, we look around, it's very easy to say that there's a lot of covetousness in the world. We look within us, and it's very easy for us to, if we're honest, say there's a lot of covetousness in the world. And so, but we see, and he points out, that even if you have all the money in the world, it's not enough to fulfill. And it kind of comes to a conclusion then, so if you don't need all this, let's just live a life kind of in the middle. We don't need lots, but we need more than nothing. So then he comes to that, what I would say is that the idea that moderation is the answer. We talked about the ancient idea of the golden mean. Don't go too far this way, don't go too far that way. There's a ditch on both sides of the road. Moderation, just live a life, live within your means, just be calm and carry on. but the problem with that, he points out, is that if you live that way, you begin to be cynical and say, well, okay, I don't need to be overly righteous, because nobody, even the most righteous man on the earth, falls, and everybody sins a little, so just so I don't sin too much. And we get and that view of if you just say, I'm not going to worry about anything, I'm just going to be moderate, just be in the middle, even that ends up in the wrong place and doesn't fulfill. None of those pursuits in life, whether it's completely or some mixture of them, will fill the void that is planted in the heart of men. We pointed it out as we came along that Ecclesiastes says that the world is in the heart of men, or eternity is in the heart of men. And so here, what we see under the sun in life around us is not eternal. And so obviously everything here under the sun, even if we get all of what's here, it's still not going to fulfill, because there's eternity within our heart. All of us know that there's more to life than this, but we are here. Okay. But we are here, so what should we do? Should we be like the, super ethereal, mystical people, put white robes on and just kind of look in the skies all the time? And then have to do what? Beg for food because we're not even working? That's not what to do. Throughout, we've gotten these miniature or gotten partial conclusions that have said, live in the time that you're given. Okay? You're here right now. Live in the time that you're given. Don't think, oh, if only I lived back then, or if just live in the time that you're given. Live with the things you're given. God prospers your work. Enjoy the things that God has given you. Don't covet more things, but live with the things that you've been given. And live doing the jobs that you've been assigned. And that's not exactly, but God's put you in a certain place with certain things and with something to do. Do that. In one sense, it is kind of a, don't worry about other people. Don't worry about other things. As I was reviewing and think of this, I thought of, remember Jesus with John and Peter? And Jesus said to Peter, if I decide that this man doesn't ever die, what is that to you? You just follow me. Remember that in John 21, verse 22, it actually is. And that thought is kind of what Ecclesiastes is teaching us throughout. Don't worry about people with more knowledge or less knowledge or more things and all of that. Just do what you've been given to do. And do it with joy. Live with joy where you are. So, that's a long introduction, but bring us to the point. We have kind of a shorter lesson this morning. What he's doing at this point in his sermon, in the book, he's what I would say summarizing. Okay? He's given his text, he's given his points, and now he's summarizing. That means, how do the preachers say it? In conclusion. You know, now we're going to conclude for several weeks here because we need Sam to be back before we actually conclude. He's out of town, but Stephen will pass along the message to him. But you know how the preachers, they start concluding and then out. So he's starting his conclusion, so he's going to summarize. And what we see here is he talks about wisdom again, and he talks about pleasure again. So he's summarizing that, and next week we'll have a little more summary, and then we'll get into this full-blown conclusion. And then he really gives a forceful statement conclusion after that. So in verse 16 of chapter 8, remember he said wisdom and knowledge doesn't answer, and we talked about how you as much as you seek for wisdom, there's heartbreak there. The more you know, the more heartache you know, and that type of thing. And so he says, when I applied my heart to know wisdom, to see the business that is done upon the earth, for there is that neither day nor night seeth sleep with his eyes. So here's somebody that gives his whole life to knowing and business. Then I beheld the work of God that what? That a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. You can look and you can learn and you can gather lots and lots of stuff. But you can't find it out completely. You're never going to know everything. You can seek and you can gain, yet there will always be more to know. He says, a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun, because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. So we can look, and there's nothing wrong with learning necessarily, but you can look and look and look. But if you think that you're going to finally get to the end and that's going to give you meaning, you won't find it. Yea, farther, though a wise man think to know it, somebody comes along and he is, brilliant. But if he says, I know the answers because of all this knowledge, yet shall I not be able to find it. Doesn't matter how wise you are. In fact, bringing some biblical sense to this, really, the wise person, he may know a lot, but the more a wise person knows, the more he knows what he doesn't know. Now, that's kind of tricky. It's a fun way to use the word know. But if you think about a young child, how much do they know? Not very much. But some young children that don't know very much at all, they think they pretty much got it handled. Teenagers, you know. How much does a teenager know? But they think they know. They think they got it all. But the more we know, especially if we do have some godly wisdom, the more we know, the more we realize, wow, there's a lot more out there to know. God is infinite. And we'll never reach what there is to know. And in fact, the more we learn, the more we see that there's lots more to learn. And so there's almost, that shouldn't say, well, it's futile, let's not learn anything. But it should tell us that we're not going to find the answer just in learning. And that's his summary. You're not going to find it there. You can think that you know it, but you haven't really found it. So we don't, and one of the things is we can know a lot, but we don't know what our actions will produce. How many of you have done something that you thought would be appreciated and people didn't like it? We don't know. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and the works are in the hand of God. No man knows either love or hatred by all that is before them. Some things they do, people love it, and some other people hate it, or you thought people would hate it and they loved it, and they thought people would love it and they hated it. So much for our great knowledge, right? We don't know. Okay? We don't know. We don't, and then, whether we know a lot or a little, we can't really explain why. If we knew everything, well, no. If we went with our knowledge, we would make sure that good people get good things and bad people get bad things, right? That makes sense to us, but all things come alike to all. There's one event to the righteous and to the wicked. Now, there, wicked is contrasted with righteous. Okay? But, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean. to him that sacrificeth and to him that sacrifices not. You would think that good things would come to the one that sacrifices, and the guy that doesn't sacrifices, you know, doesn't sacrifice, his farm would have like an umbrella over it, and no rain would get on that. But the rain falls on the just and the unjust. As is the good, so is the sinner. And he that sweareth, as he that feareth swearing, or feareth an oath. This is an evil among all things that are done in the sun. So there's bad things that happen to everyone on the sun, and it is that one event happens to everyone, to all. Also, the heart of the sons of men is full of evil. Madness is in their heart, or madness is not anger. Madness is more like now my brain is, I don't know the answer. That's good, isn't it? madness is, it's right there. Anyway, it's not anger. It's the other, like he's mad with, out of his brain, out of his head. Crazy. Yes, thank you. The heart of men is full of evil, bad things, and madness is in their heart while they live, and after that, they go to the dead. If we, in our knowledge, that's not the way it should happen. So, knowledge is not the answer. For him that is joined to all the living, there's hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. In this, we like dogs, we're afraid of lions, but in their culture, a dog was a scoundrel. I mean, it's like the low life, rooted around in the garbage. And if you had a lion was a representation of power and dignity. Kings had lions. Scum Jews had dogs. Right? Okay? So, but if you're dead, what good are you if you're a lion, if you're dead? But a dog, better to have be a low-life dog that's alive, because if you're alive, you have your senses about you, than to be a regal, stately lion that's, you know, stuffed with stuffing, with nothing. So better that the living use their wisdom. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more reward. For the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Neither had they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. So regardless of what you got, whether it's good or bad, your knowledge, when you're dead, it's gone. Then he says, go thy way, eat thy bread with joy. And this is where he's kind of summarizing the idea of pleasure. Remember he said that true pleasure, there is pleasure in things, and those are not evil or bad in and of themselves. But if we think that we're going to answer all the questions of life, if we're going to get fulfillment and meaning from pleasure alone, we're going to fall short. So he basically says, okay, so enjoy the things that God has given you, but realize it's not going to end. It just, if that's where you're looking for things, it's not going to end the way you think it will. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine with a merry heart. So eat, even have fine foods. Wine would be something that not everybody could have. So eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, thy head lack no ointment. So if you can have nice clothing and you can treat yourself nicely that way, do that. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity. So enjoy your wife. For that is thy portion in this life, and live joyfully in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. So enjoy your work. Whatsoever your hand finds to do or findeth to do, do it with thy might. Okay? So whatever you find to do, do it. Enjoy it. Because you're not going to be able to enjoy it in the grave. Life is over there. Do it with thy might. There's no work, there's no device, nor knowledge, wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. And he returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. So here, it seems to me he's saying, but don't set your heart on those things. Because life is not the way you think. You would think the race would go to the fast person. You would think the battle would be won by the strong person. You'd think bread would be to the wise and riches to men of understanding, but even favor doesn't go to men of skill. Time and chance happens to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken of men. So you can enjoy life, and you can do these things, but you don't know when life is going to be over. It could stop today. Or you could go on for a long time. You could be enjoying all these things, and right in the middle of all those pleasures, life would end. And then that begs the question, doesn't it? Then what? Because pleasures, what? They don't fulfill. There's something after that. There's something when life ends, and that's what Ecclesiastes is teaching us over, over and over. So then what? And so then pleasures, obviously, are not the answer also. So we've got a quick, we're beginning his summary. Knowledge and pleasures, remember, those are, while they're good, and they're not wicked in and of themselves, necessarily, they're not the answer. Our answer is going somewhere else, and we keep hinting toward it. And right there, life is going to end. And pleasures aren't going to be, must not be the, they're not the answer. So what is the answer? And that should challenge us each day of our life, that it's not, this is not it. There's more to it. Let's pray. Our Father, again, we thank you for your word and pray that you would help us as we study it to understand it better. But Lord, not just to be able to say, oh, I understand that better. Please help our knowledge to influence and change the way we act in our lives, to change the decisions we make, to change the choices that we take, even the actions and deeds that we do. We ask that you would be glorified in our lives through the way that we obey your word. Pray that you'd bless our preaching service. In Jesus' name, amen.